It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
Atamarie, Rachel. I'm very good, thank you.
That's good to hear. Hey, we've got some big topics to talk about today. We should probably acknowledge that the Trans-Tasman bubble is open now, and that's been a pretty special thing for a lot of people reuniting with family over the last 24 hours.
Wasn't it great just to see all those families, you know, meeting together? They've been separated for, you know, 15 months, sometimes longer.
Mm.
And, you know, if for no other reason, forget the tourist side and the economic benefits, but just to allow families to get back together again. That was pretty special, you know, grandmums and grandchildren and sisters and those in relationships, really something to celebrate and, you know, doing it safely. That's the important thing as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about something that's not COVID-related this morning. It's this new announcement from the government that there's going to be some funding and a kind of partnership going on with Amazon Studios. This is particularly around the TV aspect of Amazon, but it's been causing quite a bit of public tension, I think, particularly from the film industry. A lot of people are saying, why aren't we spending this on our internal film industry here in New Zealand? And also we're seeing some concerns about what this might mean for opening the door more broadly for other shoots of the Amazon company to come into New Zealand. What's your thoughts around this as the Mayor of Auckland?
Well, I think it's something to celebrate. Just take Amazon Lord of the Rings, their first season, directly employs more than 1,200 people, and largely in skilled positions, and additionally another 700 workers indirectly employed providing services to the production. They're going to spend, just in this one season one alone, $650 million. And, you know, well, I'm not a great fan of having to provide a rebate, and that's what it is. It's a rebate. It's not so much, you know, it's not a payment outside of the benefits we get from it. We just need to look at what happened. Australia thought they'd be pure in 2017, and they decided to cut their rebate. They immediately lost 97% of their foreign investment in screen production and promptly reinstated it. Now, it's a hard world out there, and we could tell them to bugger off, and we're not going to provide a rebate on their expenditure. The net cost of that would not be the $162 million that they get as a rebate, but it would be a loss of the $650 million and the 1,900 jobs that we're currently providing, and of course, you know, all the benefits. I saw before COVID, actually, it was quite an interesting statistic. 19% of all tourists coming to New Zealand said that they were influenced, at least in part, by watching the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, sequels to that. And
it has had a huge impact on our tourism industry, and of course on our film industry. You know, some people would argue it's not been entirely a positive impact, though, particularly around union laws and unionisation. That's always been a really sore point with the Lord of the Rings series. I think a big concern people have is less about the jobs that's going to be opening up. That's definitely a positive, but perhaps about where is the same focus on our internal film industry, our, you know, fledgling grassroots stuff. Do you think we could be seeing more funding maybe at the same time if that's a thing that was possible for that fledgling local industry?
Well, this gives a huge boost to the local industry. I mean, I pulled out the figures on that for you as well. Up to 95% of the crew are New Zealanders. 80%.
But I mean, working on local stories, local projects.
Yeah, but you know what this does is create a huge boost to the local film industry. It creates it. It, you know, I see that the New Zealand Film Commission is working with Amazon to make sure that we've got skilled training and a range of the different skills involved in production and post-production work. And you know, 2/3 of the speaking roles of the actors on this program are given to New Zealanders. So you know, it's something on which we can build and strengthen our own industry. And I think if you ask people working in this industry, is it a good thing to create all these work opportunities, to create this innovation, to create these skills? I went down and visited the studio probably about 18 months ago now. And, you know, it's not just the acting roles, but it's the people working on the sets. It's the people making the costumes. It's the people, that the tradies that come in to help, you know, do the construction work, highly skilled work. And that's a big sum of money. You know, if you look at the industry as a whole in Auckland, you know, you're talking about more than $1.1 billion of expenditure from film production in Auckland alone. That's huge, and in terms of employment.
If we look more broadly, though, than perhaps the film industry specifically, there are some concerns about what it looks like and what it means to perhaps be giving this rebate to a company that has internationally a pretty poor reputation, the parent company of Amazon, for workers' rights, and also particularly in the pandemic, the health and safety aspects, a lot of stuff we've seen come out of America have been pretty shocking. Do we think that this is perhaps unconscionable to be opening the door to the possibility of bringing more of that side of the company into New Zealand? Because that seems to be something people are concerned about.
Well, the national government brought in the special laws that, you know, that disadvantaged unionised workers for the film industry, you know, way back about 6 years ago. But those laws have been changed by the current government. And anyone working in New Zealand works according to the health and safety and the employment laws of this country, and the minimum wages of this country. And of course, a whole lot of people working in this area are not getting the minimum wage. Of course, they're highly skilled workers and they're getting really good wages. We could be pure on everything and say, look, we don't like this aspect or that aspect, so we'll keep it out. But it's pretty much like the old saying, it's you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face. Would we be better off without the you know, potentially six seasons of Lord of the Rings here, or worse off? And patently, we'd be billions and billions of dollars worse off, and thousands and thousands of jobs worse off. And what we want to do in this country is not simply be a low cost tourist industry or a totally reliant on primary production. We want to encourage the building of skills in this country. We want to encourage innovation. We want to encourage the development of industries that are at the cutting edge of the world economy. And what better to do that than the screen production industry that you know, really does promote this country and really does create the basis for us to continue to attract not only Amazon but other productions here, in the knowledge that this country handled its COVID crisis really well and is a good, safe, stable place to run these productions.
Well, I'm sure we'll be able to come back to this one, because I think it's going to be probably an ongoing conversation for quite some time, particularly here in Auckland. But let's talk a wee bit about water, which has been another thing that has popped up a lot over the last year. We've got some new water targets, though, for the city of Auckland for the next 30 years. What's that going to look like, and how are we going to achieve them?
Yeah, when we look at the city into the future, we've got growing population, which you know, could take us up to 2.5 million people by the 2050s. And we've got the impact of climate change and longer and more severe droughts. So how do we deal with that? Well, one way we deal with it, of course, is increasing the resilience of our supply, and that's why we're spending $250 million this year, and including extra take from the Waikato, the final element of that for the time being is coming on in June, so just 2 months away. That's another 50 million litres a day. But what we've also got to do is stop water wastage. We've got to think about conservation. We've got to think about water as a valuable resource that should not be wasted. Mm. And what we've achieved, actually, ironically, with the help of the drought, you know, there's every dark cloud has a silver lining. We've achieved by far the lowest per capita daily water consumption of any city in New Zealand. We were running at about an average of 286 litres a day per person. Because without too much hardship, I've got to say, because we brought in the water use education and some marginal restrictions, you know, like not leaving your hose running without having a trigger nozzle on it, etc. We've taken it from 286 litres a day per person to 260. And what we want to do is take that still further down to about 225 litres a day. And we're doing that by a variety of things. Some of it, you know, smart meters so that you can actually monitor where you've got leaks and how much consumption people are using. Some of it's just through good education.
That's what I wanted to ask about. How do we kind of maintain that? Because it has been impressive how we've managed to keep our per capita water usage down in the last year. But how do we maintain that? Is it sustainable over a long period of time, do you think?
Well, what happened when we last had a situation like that way back in 1993-94, we cut water consumption by 20%, and I think we held on longer term to about 7% of that, so just over a third. We want to do better this time. Some of it is basically an education. You just get into the habit of, hey, when I'm cleaning my teeth, just don't leave the water running while you're cleaning your teeth. You know, it's tiny little things, but it all adds up collectively. But there are other things as well. Obviously, we've encouraged, we've taken away the cost of consenting for having your own water tank. What we're also looking at doing is a lot of new developments require you to have water retention tanks so that you don't overflow your stormwater system when it rains heavily. But at the moment, those tanks aren't plumbed so that you can use the water. It just gradually releases it into the stormwater system.
Right.
And what we're looking at is little things like, you know, new housing developments. Plumb your water retention tanks so that you can use that. And best of all, if you can feed that, say, into your toilet system or your shower. So you don't need purified water, obviously, to flush your toilet or even, for that matter, to have a shower. Rainwater's perfectly good at doing that. So some of those things will be valuable. Watercare is doing a lot more to cut back on its water leakage. You know, water leakage around the country is probably around 20%. In Auckland, it's 13%, and we've just managed, with upping our level of repair work, we've managed to reduce that by about, we're saving about 50 million litres a day, I think it is. And we can do better than that, although you do get to the point where it's economically more expensive to trace and stop all your leaks than it is to provide the new water. So you've got to find that sweet spot. But we can do better in reducing our leakages. Just something I'll finish on this is Eden Park. I'm going to be opening their, or reopening the bore that they use to water their fields. Now, that's 1.6 million litres of water that we'll save, not using purified drinking water to put on the grass, but actually using a bore and bringing the water up from under the ground. So there's a whole range of things like that, Rachel, that I think would be really valuable.
Absolutely. But let's just very briefly, before we let you go, touch on some cool news for Queen Street, particularly around some increased pedestrianisation and making it a more appealing part of the CBD to go and visit. When is the sort of, I guess, end date for this goal that we've got here? What's the timeline looking like?
Well, the start date's probably in a couple of weeks, which is the good news. And I don't know about you, but I was getting fed up with the temporary measures that were put in place by Auckland Transport to deal with the pandemic, you know, so to allow for greater social distancing. So the yellow sticks and the white stones and the painted pavement, you know, that was okay for a temporary measure, but it's been there too long. So what we're going to replace that with is wider extended decking pavements like we've got in High Street, which I think if you've been up High Street is working really well. We're going to have trees and shrubs and proper planting boxes. We're going to have decent street furniture. We're going to do a little pocket park on the corner of Fort Street. It won't be the last word in it. We will be trialling this, but we'll be trialling it not through the use of something that makes you feel like you're in a construction site, but something that looks, you know, long term and makes it an attractive place to be in rather than just pass through. So I think that'll be widely welcomed. It won't solve all the problems of Queen Street, because Queen Street, if you know, get down there, is suffering a lot through the loss of tourism, the cruise ships, the international students, the international visitors, and there's a lot of places up for lease, etc. So you can see the impact of COVID on that. So council and business and other groups will also need to focus on, you know, what can you do to make the centre city a more attractive place to come back to.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Have a good week until then.
Thanks, Rachel. Look forward to it next week.
All right. Take care. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank